You and I together again back at a midweek Wednesday, February 23rd, 2022 program on Connecticut Today. We chatted about another attempt by some members of the General Assembly to apparently disregard Connecticut's constitution regarding the use of absentee ballots. American Cancer Society Director of Government Relations Bright Johnson offered his opinion on the anticipated failure again of Connecticut to use its share of the Tobacco Settlement Fund for youth tobacco prevention programs. I wanted to start with this today because here we go again. Here we go again. Great old song by Glenn Miller, by the way. Check that out. It's one of those Miller cuts that doesn't get a lot of play. Here we go again. In the Connecticut News Junkie, and again, this is one of the things I don't like to gloat about this stuff. I don't like to say, "Look how smart I was," this is just another episode of the same old story. Committee to raise absentee voting bill. Now, already I have friends of mine on Facebook when I put this story. What? Are you not for people voting? Oh, my God. Oh, I get that every time. Every time. Every time that I put this up, I get the same thing. Well, don't you want people to vote? No. It's the process here. Let's talk about the process. And let me give you some highlights of this article. You can look at it for yourself. It was posted today, the 23rd of February, 2022, bright and early this morning by Hugh McQuaid in the News Junkie. Lawmakers on the legislature's Government, Administration, and Elections Committee plan to raise a bill Wednesday, today, that would loosen restrictions on Connecticut voters looking to cast absentee ballots during this year's elections. Here we go again. Already they're worried about COVID this coming November. Okay, last November I could see it, the November before I could see it. But again, here we go. Well, you know, it could be bad. So let's get this out of the way now. The committee included the concept on its agenda for the first meeting of the year at noon. On Tuesday, Senator Will Haskell, Westport Democrat, said the issue was a focus for both chambers during the session. Both Senate Democrats and House Democrats have really prioritized the issue. A lesson learned from the 2020 election is the increased access to absentee ballots makes our democracy more accessible, more inclusive, and more representative. Well, that's not necessarily true, but everybody likes to say that. However, Republican lawmakers have been critical of attempts to continue the policy as the severity of the pandemic has dwindled. The state's constitution. Here is the part that concerns me. The state's constitution, yes, the governing document of the state of Connecticut, does not allow early voting and restricts absentee ballot voting to a handful of specific excuses like active military duty, religious beliefs, or sickness. So let me ask you, And maybe I know the answer to this. Maybe this is just rhetorical. Why are we so in this state? Or why is, let me just ask this straight out. Why is the majority in Hartford ready to again, right? It sounds like they are. You correct me if I'm wrong. Why is the majority in Hartford sounding like it is ready again to what word could you use? What words could you use? Make an end around the Constitution? Patently do something that's unconstitutional? Why do you think that is? The Conservative Caucus on Tuesday issuing a news release calling attempts to allow no excuse absentee voting a violation of the Connecticut State Constitution. State Rep. Gail Mastro-Francesco of Woolcott said the legislature has only continued Connecticut's state of emergency to continue qualify for increased federal reimbursements. And she said, and she's damn right, compounding this deceitfulness by using COVID-19 as a pretext to unconstitutionally change our voting laws would be an abhorrent affront to the rule of law. So do you understand what's going on here, kids? You understand that? Do you understand this? The crying and the screaming and the whining about COVID-19 is already being used and being posed and posited here as an agreement or an excuse, I should say, to, again, trample on the state constitution already. It's February, for God's sake. It's not August, September, October, or November. We don't need any sort of guarantee of expanded no-excuse absentee ballots. Now, the only reason you would want that is if you, again, want to trample on the Constitution of the state of Connecticut. You want to change the six specific areas in the Constitution that allow for absentee ballot use or no-excuse absentees, go ahead. But you got to start the process. But again, there are people in this state who govern us who say, as the process is too long, it doesn't go the way we want it to. It's just, they got to take all these votes. And the Constitution, it's so confusing. Well, it's supposed to be that way. It's supposed to be hard. Rules are made to be rules. They're made to set limits and margins. Last year, lawmakers passed a resolution to put the question of removing constitutional restrictions before Connecticut voters. However, Republican opposition prevented it from receiving the supermajority vote necessary to allow it to appear on ballots this year. As it stands now, the resolution will need to be approved by the legislature again after the 2020 election. The earliest voters could weigh in would be 2024. So what the majority Democrats are doing here, folks, is they're throwing a fit. They're throwing a tantrum. Now, if we get this huge spike, if we get another uptick in Omicron or Delta or B2 or A2 or B3, whatever the next variant's going to be, and we see that months out before the campaign, all right, then you do the executive order again and you mail out the ballots. But there is zero excuse to do that at this point. Maybe a month or two or three down the line, but not now. Zero excuse. This is trampling on the Constitution of the state of Connecticut. The severity of COVID-19 now is nowhere what it was last year, is nowhere what it was the year before. The numbers continue to go down. Our positivity rate keeps going down to just above 3%. It'll be released again next hour for what it was the past 3 days, you know, for what it was Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. We'll see that. So again, using this as an excuse to trample on the Constitution of the state of Connecticut, the rule book as to how we do things in a cheap election year stunt is unconscionable. Every couple of years, we seem to jump on this here merry-go-round of, hey, here comes all that tobacco fund money, and the state of Connecticut, that is, usually finishes last or second to last or third to last in the bottom five, as I recall, of states basically not using the money that it is it's been designated to use for, as far as smoking cessation and keeping kids away from tobacco. Right now we're joined by the American Cancer Society's Director of Government Relations, Bright Johnson, to chat about this. Bright, hi, it's Paul on WICC in Bridgeport. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Very, very well. Good to talk with you. This seems to be, and you've obviously seen the numbers over the years, this seems to be a continued problem here in Connecticut. That we got, you know, we were given out this designated chunk of money years ago, and we seem to finish near dead last every year in the country and not really use the money what it's designated for.
That's absolutely correct. The master settlement agreement was reached about 20 years ago between 46 attorneys general across the country and the big five tobacco companies. Essentially, the purpose of the master settlement was so the attorneys general filed a lawsuit against big tobacco to recover costs for citizens in their states using tobacco products. And the settlement was that Big Tobacco would pay out a certain amount of money to each state every year in an effort to offset the cost of tobacco use in their states. Connecticut receives about $120 million annually every single year. But unfortunately, that money goes directly into the general fund and is not actually used to offset the cost of tobacco use in the state. So wound up basically last in the country in terms of spending money on tobacco control.
When you confront lawmakers on that, if you do, or public policy experts on that, what's their reaction when you say, hey, what is this general fund stuff? Can we at least use some of this designated for what it was supposed to be used for? What do they tell you?
Well, to be honest with you, most lawmakers have no idea that we aren't spending this money on tobacco.
Oh, God.
Tobacco. The state has been in such fiscal dire straits for the last decade and a half that they're basically, you know, flipping couch cushions looking for spare change to offset the budget deficits. But right now we are actually in a really good position in terms of our fiscal health. We have a huge budget surplus. We have an enormous $3 billion in the rainy day fund. And so now is the time to actually be looking at what we should be spending this money on. And one of these things is we should be spending this money on tobacco control, because unfortunately tobacco kills 4,900 people annually in this state, which is 13 per day. And it costs $2.03 billion in healthcare costs every single year. And we're doing absolutely nothing to combat that.
Right. Is there anybody in a high enough level here? Are there any loud voices sympathetic to this, saying, you know, you're right, we need to be taking at least some of this money and at least using a part of it to keep kids away from tobacco or for cessation programs? Do you have any people kind of riding shotgun for you on this, or is it just a bunch of people saying, yeah, well, whatever, we have other problems?
Well, there are obviously a number of issues that the legislature is trying to deal with each and every year. But right now we have there are a number of bills that have been introduced to the Appropriations Committee this year that include a huge number of co-sponsors. Right now we have a bill that has 40 co-sponsors in the legislature. So I think that we are making some noise and we are attracting attention to this very important issue.
Now, again, that's going to be paramount because there are budget hearings coming up. I know we're in the middle of them, but you sent the release out today because there are budget hearings coming up over the next couple of days, correct?
That's correct. The Appropriations Committee is going to be meeting over the next couple of weeks to hear arguments about the governor's budget revision that he submitted a couple of weeks ago. Unfortunately, he did not include tobacco control in his budget, but we're hoping that we can make some noise and speak to it during these budget hearings over the next couple of weeks. We have a hearing actually Thursday that we're hoping to convince the Appropriations Committee to include some funding in their budget.
You know, Bright, it's and I said this before I got this release. This was well into last week. I said it's kind of ironic because every time there is a push to, for example, get rid of flavored vapes, the vaping, which is big among teenagers now. You know, I and in fact, I brought this very thing up, Brian. I said, look, I understand the concern about vaping. There's all different arguments for that, for the kids, doctors, retailers. But we're suspiciously quiet, are we not, on cigarettes? It's like, well, yeah, kids get away with cigarettes. So on vapes, we tend to be really crazy about it. And then, as you say, on cigarettes, it's like, yeah, kind of whatever. We get the money and let's plug some holes with it. I find it just highly disingenuous.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, these are entirely preventable issues. The fact that 40, as I said before, 4,900 people die annually, $2.03 billion in healthcare costs to the state because of vaping, because of cigarette use, and it's entirely preventable. If we just simply enforce the laws and dedicated funds to tobacco control and did everything we could to prevent people from starting and to help people quit, we'd be in much better shape.
Bright Johnson is the American Cancer Society's Director of Government Relations. Bright, thank you. We do appreciate the time on short notice. Take care, and hopefully we can chat down the road. We appreciate it. Thanks.
Anytime. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. There you go. Bright Johnson, B-R-Y-T-E. Bright is the American Cancer Society's Director of Government Relations. So what did he say? The state gets about $120 million a year from this long time ago. You remember when the tobacco settlement was? I think it was 10 or 20 years ago, right? And this was designed to be used to, you know, whatever programs you want to tell kids either don't start smoking or stay away from it. And guess what? Are you shocked? We don't use that money for it. It goes in the general fund. Ha ha! Oh, God. It writes itself, kids. It writes itself.